Well, thank you for joining us today for this podcast. We have a special guest on a really important topic. Dr. Russell James is the Director of Graduate Studies and Charitable Financial Planning for Texas Tech University. For those of us who know him, we respect his scholarship. His work is so incredibly insightful. And I would recommend, he has a couple of books out that are just excellent, but I really want to recommend that you take time to look and YouTube and study, I'm not exactly what it's called. Is it Fundraising 101 or Planned Giving 101, Russell?
Yeah, just Russell James Planned Giving. There's about 65 animated videos that goes through all that. So happy to share that with anyone who has interest.
It is, even though the people we bring on are seasoned professionals, very technically oriented, we require every new associate to go through all of those. They're short, they're insightful, they're extremely well done. So again, that's not the purpose of our discussion today, but I just can't hardly introduce Russell without suggesting people take time. Even if you're seasoned, it is a great reminder. That's what we use it for. It just reminds us of the details that we often forget and sometimes gift strategies that we forget. So Russell, I'm sorry I took a little extra time to do that, but I really appreciate your work over the years.
Thank you.
Russell, I'm not sure if this was a webinar you did, Russell, or it's a PowerPoint or how I even got to see it, but you did an amazing presentation on selling the CFO, the Chief Financial Officer, on philanthropy. And what I'd like to do is take a few minutes and let you summarize that. We plan to do a webinar in the future, an extended webinar on this topic in the future. But I find, Russell, especially now, where some CFOs really don't understand the value that philanthropy brings to the bottom line, I think this is an important topic. So what would you suggest as some major points on selling the CFO on philanthropy?
Well, you know, this was all looking at a question that's just, it's a little bit narrower. So we're looking at selling the CFO on what we would call planned giving.
Right.
So that's where we're looking at complex gifts, the estate gifts, gifts of assets, that sort of thing. And, you know, this is always a challenge because you've got the reality that whatever the leadership person is, whether it's CFO, executive director, board, whatever, they've got so much urgent right in front of them.
Right.
And they look at legacy giving, plan giving, and they just think, you know, that's nice, but I've got other things to deal with right now.
Right.
And so this was really about how do we have that conversation in a meaningful and influential way? And it turns out we can have a different kind of conversation today because we've got more data on donor behavior that I think tells a different story than what we've been telling before.
Mm-hmm.
So the basic idea is this. When we look at a variety of different results, it shows us that the most powerful transformation that you can make for your donors is to get them to not just give out of pocket change, that is their disposable income, but instead to start thinking about giving out of wealth. Now, this is a transformational step for a donor. And it turns out that in recent years, I've been publishing some new results. And when I went to try to explain all of these results, I think I'm basically seeing different results that are all looking at the same underlying phenomenon. So a couple of years ago, we looked at over 1 million nonprofit tax returns and tried to look at what predicts long-term fundraising growth. And it turns out that a dominant predictor was whether or not the organization was raising gifts from non-cash assets like stocks and real estate. In fact, just that one little piece of information would tell you what the growth rate was going to be for the next 5 years in fundraising. And if they're only raising gifts from cash, they're basically just treading water, trying to keep up with inflation. If they're consistently raising gifts from non-cash assets like securities and real estate, they're average growth rate is six-fold larger. So it was a massive impact. Then just a few months ago in the UC Davis Law Review published some results that showed what happens to current giving after a person includes charity in their estate plan for the first time.
Yes.
And what we see is this dramatic increase in current giving that happens after that charitable component goes into the estate plan. And it's there 2, 4, 6, even 8 years later, we see this sustained dramatic increase in current giving. Now, when we look at both of these factors, I think they actually have something in common. I think they're both examples of where a donor begins to think of their wealth as donation relevant. Now, you know, one thing I can tell you about an estate gift, regardless of what the size of that estate gift is, it is not a gift of disposable income. It's a gift from wealth. And once the donor starts thinking about giving out of wealth, in fact, once they commit to a plan that gives out of wealth, I think that's transformational. So that was the key idea. And then when we looked at messaging, it turns out that there are some powerful things we can do in this messaging. Now, one of them is I like the phrase major gifts of assets rather than talking just planned giving. And the reason is when we talk about planned giving, the CFO is going to think about, oh, that's the death stuff. That's going to come,
right,
you know, so much later. Whereas if we talk about major gifts of assets, well, major gifts, that excites any CFO, and it's now and later. But the idea is this: if you want to raise major gifts of assets, well, you can't do that unless you understand assets. You can't do that, and you can't do it competently unless you understand what a capital gain tax is, unless you understand that, wait, you can donate that appreciated asset and avoid those capital gains taxes. And in fact, you could donate that, avoid the capital gains taxes, and take income or payments off of it for your life. And so it's that one idea, major gifts of assets, and of course, an estate gift is a gift of assets as well. That one idea can then lead to why we need to use all of these techniques and why we want to be talking to our donors about these techniques, because it is transformational for what the donor does.
You know, it's a fascinating, I think you came from Central Missouri, if I remember correctly. The fascinating thing to me is the study of the Cahokia Indians. You know, for years, I mean, for decades, centuries, Indians, Native Americans, were hunter-gatherers. They would follow the herds wherever there was big game. And the Cahokia Indians found out that they could grow crops so they didn't have to move constantly. And I think for a lot of large number of not-for-profits, they're hunting that one big gift that's coming out of discretionary income, where the great organizations also go after gifts of net worth. And I think your study reinforces what I heard from a gentleman when I was doing my dissertation 40 some odd years ago now, that the great organizations not only ask for discretionary income gifts, but gifts of net worth. And your study and your approach to this over the years has just reinforced that idea.
Yeah, you know, Eddie, it's taken me a decade of technical statistical research to come up with the answer that, you know, actually, I think Eddie Thompson knows a little bit about what he was talking about.
Yeah, I do, too. I think we've been really blessed. You know, what's fascinating to me, Russell, we find that the people we plan with, less than 3% of current donors that we're planning with have ever included charity in their estate plan. And typically, it's a catastrophic clause. But after you sit down with them and have conversations, that percentage goes from 3%, listen to this, to 61%.
Yes.
And it's suggesting the idea. And the other thing, too, we have found that reinforces your study is that when someone makes a gift of a major gift asset, whether it's an inter vivos gift or a testamentary gift, their giving goes up. We have seen that now for over 25 years. And so I love your studies just reinforce what we see out in the market. And I think this presentation you're making is really important. If CFOs would stop and think about what philanthropy brings to the bottom line for their organizations every year, instead of cutting back and arguing about investments in these great giving techniques, they would be, I think, if we could share their our concepts and their language. I think they often don't understand that. And I love your use of major gift of assets, because they do understand. That's nomenclature they understand.
Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you one other thing that can be helpful, and I'll share this story because this is something I did myself recently, and this was before all of the virus and all of that. Texas Tech Foundation board gave me a chance to make a presentation to them. And so what I did, talking about the power of these non-cash contributions or major gifts of assets, is I just looked at the 990s for our competing schools. And I showed them an example of what one of our competing organizations was doing, or same athletic conference, which was Iowa State University, and showed them how we were getting such a tiny share of our fundraising from non-cash assets, and how they were getting such a huge share. And if you compared us to them in terms of just cash, we were about the same as them. But if you added in the non-cash, they were getting 60% of their income from non-cash fundraising. And so it was really powerful to decision makers to show them someone else who's doing it right. And you can, that's all publicly accessible information. Anybody can look at the 990s for those in their same sector, find that shining star example, and use that to convince leadership to say, look, here's what we could be doing, and here's what we're missing out on.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, that's an important study. I thank you for today. Thank you for your insights. I look forward to working on the webinar with you in the near future as we get closer to budget cycles. But thank you, Russell, for all your contributions. And I know that there's an awful lot of work goes into your studies, but it is really appreciated by our industry.
Thank you so much. It's great to have the opportunity to join today.
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us on this special podcast with Russell James. We hope that you'll listen very carefully to his suggestions and anything you can do to study under Russell, either through YouTube or some of his written publications. I really encourage you to do it. He has great insights. Russell, thank you for your time, and thank you, everybody, for joining us.